simple actions on alcoholic means. Debbie?
Debbie.
For those who care to join me, please open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry this clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are on step 11. And I'd like to welcome our panel. We have Alicia and Brad that's going to be sharing their experience on step 11. And the way this works is I read a paragraph and they're going to introduce themselves and share a little bit on each reading on their experience with this step. So we're going to start with on page 85, and first just to read step 11, which is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So page 85, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we selfish? Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves or should we discuss with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken.
Alicia, would you like to go?
Sure. So my name is Alicia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Alicia.
It's really good to be here tonight. Step 11 is one of my favorites. And I was telling Brad, Debbie, and Sherry before the meeting that I feel completely empty, so God's going to have to do His best work here. Probably perfectly prepared. So fear is one of my most common emotions, and it's been with me since I can remember, from a very young age. So I've always had a really strong spiritual connection, and I feel like even the night of my last drunk, I ended up on my knees in a conversation with God, a very drunken, empty conversation with God. Empty from my end, but full from the perspective that all I needed to say was, from my heart, give me one more chance, and I'll do whatever it takes. And fortunately, that took hold. So recovery for me was pretty simple in the beginning, and the pink cloud lasted for years. And then I've had, it really did. So for those of you who are new, or those of you who are on a pink cloud or trying to pretend that you're not, for the old timers who tell you that it's really not a pink cloud, it is, enjoy it. You have my blessing. It continued for a long time. And then came, you know, the dark ages. And then came a period of years where they were really tough. I see somebody screwing up their face back there. It's okay. It doesn't have to happen to you. but the reason I say all this is that prayer and meditation has been my lifeline. Now, when I used to hear people say that, I thought that all the answers were when you pray and meditate, you got instant relief. And sometimes that instant relief is just realizing that I'm in the now, in the moment, which is really vogue to say now. But in this moment, everything's okay. I don't get, you know, sometimes I do get burning bushes. Sometimes I get visions. Sometimes I get inspiration. But most of the time, it's just a go-to place to rest. And I do take an inventory nightly. I do feel badly when I feel like I did something wrong. I try not to slip into that lower place where I'm not useful to others, where I can make amends correctly and appropriately and not all about me. So that's a huge paragraph. And I'm delighted to be here tonight with Brad because I told him he's the heavy.
Oh, God bless you. My name's Brett. My name's Brad. I'm an alcoholic. I guess I really do got to get up on this thing. I just want to say this is my new home group, and I love it. I also want, you know, this is, we're talking about prayer and meditation and improving conscious contact with God, and this sounds like very virtuous stuff, and I got to tell you that that's, you know, not what has propelled me to do this. You know, I was driven to AA. I've been driven to AA twice. The first time how I came to AA was primarily because of the allergy aspect of alcoholism. I came to AA at the age of 22, and I basically just drank nonstop for several years until every aspect of my outer life was decimated. And I reached out for help, and I got to AA, and I was happy to come to AA, and I saw your solution on your posters on the wall, and I thought those were kind of cool, but I didn't think that all that was absolutely necessary. What propelled me to even do the steps the very first time was you take away the drinking, which is my solution, and I find that I don't do well without alcohol and without some kind of good way to live. And and what happened for me was it took about 4 years. Before I even got a sponsor and did some steps, but you know, it's kind of cool being here in Norfolk with this is a very big book based community, particularly right here in Ghent, and that was not who I was first introduced to in AA. That was not the group of people. They weren't there weren't technicians, you know. They were. It was very 12 and 12 where I got sober, and I didn't even know that the big book laid out clear, precise instructions on how to do this deal. But what ended up happening to me is I stopped doing the work of AA, and I drank again, and in that in my. Second venture of a drinking, which lasted about 2.5 years. That's when I really got in touch with this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. And I was one of those people that really tried to stay stopped on all with whatever means I could come up with self-knowledge, with some new strategy of work, relationship, exercise, all these things. And I found that I always ended up back in the drink. And anyway, circumstances, once again, I there was no choosing. I didn't choose to come back to AA. As a matter of fact, I tried to do a lot of choosing to come back to AA, and I couldn't come up with the power to do it. I ended up back in AA by a series of events where I ended up in a intervention, and ended up in a rehab. And something happened in while I was in that detox that I say I had a little kind of mini spiritual awakening that somehow awakened me to that this is a life or death deal, and I really need to, you know, do the sponsor thing. And it wasn't even then that I first got involved with our, you know, diehard big book recovery. That came years later, but fortunately I did. And suffering is what I, you know, took me to that place again, you know, where I was having to really do this deal. And now I'm going to fast forward to the step 11 part because I don't know if it's my favorite step, but it's become very important. This is something that I've really made a practice, particularly in the past couple of years, and the way that I do it is I've had to I have a 11 step partner, particularly for the nighttime review part. I have a nighttime I call my fellow AA and we read this section every night and we answer these questions. And I love. Well, I don't love this. It's interesting. Better men than we are using it constantly. That's interesting. I guess they we're not the better people, you know. And I wish I could say that I'm using it constantly, but that's just one of these things that's spiritual progress for me. Certainly, prayer and meditation, and has become a much greater part of my life. When I do this at night, we go line by line and we answer every single question in here. And this is, I was thinking about, you know, the step prior to this, about step 10, it seems to be a whole lot of emphasis on, in examining and particularly looking for these key things, you know. And as our, in the 10th step, it's asking us to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And that's something that I don't do constantly. I'm not constantly watching for. I'm not that awake yet. But so I've got this 11th step thing that at night I get to, if I'm doing this, I get to see, you know, what did I miss in the day? Where was I afraid? You know, where did these things that I missed? And then it just asks, you know, and there's so much redundancy in all this stuff. And, you know, there seems to be a theme about rigorous self-examination, getting to God, giving this stuff to God, and then, you know, getting freed up to somehow so I can be useful to those about me. And that's, you know, it ends this thing is, I'm not doing this being free of this worry, remorse, and all these things so I can feel better. It's asking me if I don't, it's going to diminish my usefulness to others. And also, you know, and going back on this theme about this stuff, you know, what I learned earlier on in the steps was that these are the things that were clogging me up, that were making life hard for me, you know, and I had to be free. I was this channel to this power greater than myself has just been clogged up, and I have to get free of that. I have to have an experience of the freedom of that, and in spite of doing that, you know, even the most thorough fourth and fifth step and making all the amends I can make, I still manage to want to play God, run life on self-will. And as a result of doing that, I get afraid. I get angry at you. I get resentful. And then I'll start lying to you. And next thing you know, I'm creating double and triple lives and all this stuff. And so I've got to continually mine for this stuff, or I'm in trouble. So, thanks.
Thank you. We're going to read on page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
So, this is actually true. which I find kind of amusing. When I like about when it talks about asking, and Brad has that circled, I'm telling you in your notes, and prayer written down there, I can ask a lot, you know, in prayer a lot. Prayer is really easy for me. You know, I can ask, I can beg, I can plead, I can complain, I can be angry. It took me years to get angry at God, but I've been through one of those phases and survived it. God did just fine too. That's when I realized really how majestic and big God really is. But the meditation part, you know, I kind of brush that off to the side. The reason this paragraph's important to me is because when I do listen, when I'm in that place of quiet reflection or beaten down badly enough that I'm forced, broken open, as I like to say, broken open, then I can allow myself to be broken back together. And the way that the pieces fit back together is when I listen to those intuitive hunches. And they come from my heart, they come from somewhere else, they sure don't come from my head. And they always work. And I find that in my work, I find that in my relationships with people, I find that when I'm having a conversation, if I hear, ask him about his father, or, you know, something that comes from somewhere else. It is always, always right on. And that's uncanny. There's no way that could work unless I was connected to something a lot larger than me. So I think it's the reason Brad and I wore matching colors tonight. I do love to laugh, even when the times are kind of dark. Like I was joking about the dark ages. What I found through prayer and meditation in step 11 in my relationship with a higher power that I don't ever care to understand because I don't want him to be that small, him, her, it. What I've found with great relief is that I've never lost faith in whatever that is. And I'm not speaking, you know, for any of you. I'm not speaking for any of you that don't have, I feel that you have a connection like that. But I've never lost faith. I've lost faith in myself. I have felt like I'm not doing something right, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not deserving. But I've never, ever once lost faith that there really is something big in charge. And I'm not a big, you know, Bible thumper or spiritual book thumper, but I know, as some of us do, a lot of those ancient stories about, you know, great people who have gone through a lot for a number of years, and it's not without carving a better inside than previously existed. I heard somebody say something. Actually, it was one of our renowned speakers, one of the circuit speakers, and I was listening to one of his old tapes, Bob D. As you guys know him. I know people are working in the grids. I love him. And I was listening to one of his tapes from years ago, and he said something about a blessing being something that drags you kicking and screaming and, you know, denying, and to be a better person than you were before. And so the challenging time that comes in recovery now and then has absolutely done that. And I find that my best meditation and my best listening is when I'm back on my knees, literally or figuratively, because that's when my head's out of the way and my heart can pay attention.
All right. On awakening, my least favorite part of the day. I don't wake up shining, looking for, ready to tackle the day. I typically, even today, I wake up with a, you know, what am I going to do? You know? And so, and this is, like she said, I circled the S in here because it is, it's a prayer. And so the first thing, even before I consider my day, it says that I ask God to direct my thinking. And that's one that I got direct. I think it was, I got it from this meeting at some point. Someone years ago said that that's what they do right on their, laying on their back. You know, when my eyes wake up, that's a real easy prayer. And so I've stolen that. and yeah, self-pity. These are a lot of my favorite things. Self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. That's what I've been running on my entire life. And here I'm trying to, instead of living a life on self-will, learn to start developing God dependency. And so this is what it's asking me to start my day with. And it says our thought life will be placed on a much higher plan. Our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. It's interesting, even just my short little prayers in the morning do alleviate some of the natural almost anxiety that I attempt to tackle my days with. And thinking about our day. Everything we're reading and read tonight is essentially about asking God to direct my life, and it's a challenge. It's a real challenge for a guy like me. You know, I've been taught, you know, what's to be a man. You know, you tackle the world. You know, real men. I don't need to talk to anybody. I'll figure it out myself. And we'll see what happens. And that formula for me is typically created a mess. You know, and even if I didn't present a mess, it's my interior life is a mess. You know, I'm terrified, even though I'm maybe looking something like something else. And this is true as I learn to do this thing. You know, this thing called intuition or this. Hunch, use the word hunch, becomes kind of a working part of the mind. I've noticed that over the years that certain things kind of come to me without the effort, without the really kind of digging down and mulling it over. And those kind of scenarios seem to kind of naturally work out better than what I kind of drum up. And it says here, still being inexperienced and having just made conscious contact. And I can say, I've been doing this for the better part of, 27 years, minus a couple of years in there drinking. But attempting to do this, and I still feel, inexperienced to some degree. But the cool thing is that I grow in my experience just by applying these things. And a lot of times I'm applying, like even the prayers, the stuff that I do in AA, a lot of the times it is very rote. It is very automatic. You know, I find a groove and I just, I don't really think about it and I do it. But the more I do this, you know, my experience with this, certainly with this whole, this God business, the God thing, you know, has absolutely seemed to expand over the years. And this is, you know, and I've, and being around here, I originally thought that in AA that, you know, like you really got in here and you did business, or you really got down at the beginning, and then you could kind of coast a little bit. You can take your foot off the brake, you know, let the young people or the new people do the work, and, you know, I'll be the elder and kind of coach me around, man. I tell you, the longer I'm around, the more I feel like the road narrows. The more I am, the more important this thing seems to me, or it seems and is to me, and I can't, you know. And as much as I'm a negotiator. I swear, I really want to negotiate everything, spiritual principles, whatever. And man, I'm a terrible negotiator, apparently. And every time I try to stray from doing this, you know, I seem to find a nudge back in the direction I'm running from. So that's all I've got on that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to page 87. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
So, yeah. I just, this to me speaks of asking throughout the day for continued guidance and checking my motives. I was talking with someone who's not one of us the other day, and I was asking him what his motives were, and he said, "I don't know what you mean." And I said, "Yeah, I didn't used to know either." So we talked about the outcome and the outcome that he was hoping to get by making, and it was really good because I'm so used to talking to us about it, and we know what this means. It was good to have to explain it because that made me think about it even more. And we talked about the outcome that he was anticipating and three possible outcomes and, you know, which one of them might be controlling or manipulative. And it was a lot more about me than it was about him. I hope he got help, but it clarified things for me anyway. So there you go. All about me. But the motivation to help other people usually is not that far from me. I'm absolutely selfish and self-centered. Don't get me wrong. But I genuinely put people in a place where I don't want to hurt anybody. And I think that comes from a lot of pain from the past and a lot of making amends that I don't want to have to do. And I'm sure a lot of people hurting me. I don't want to make people feel like I've been hurt. I don't want to make people feel that kind of betrayal or that kind of disappointment at all. And so that's kind of natural. But, you know, it is really easy to... I'm a body worker by trade, so I process things in my body. I'm a massage therapist, acupressurist, that's what I do. And I process things in my body. I have to feel them in my body, and I don't know if that makes sense to all of you. My head will manipulate anything. Mm-hmm. Now that makes sense to you. My head will make me believe that I am the most virtuous, altruistic individual, and that I have, you know, to be held in the highest regard. But in my body, I can feel it. Even as I'm saying that, my stomach's going, my stomach is twisting, or my heart will drop, or it feels closed and tight. My shoulders will feel tense. My neck will feel tight. And so my body will never lie to me. Our bodies, none of ours, will ever lie. My head cannot be trusted. My mind can make anything possible. But my body will never lie. So one of the ways that I've learned to check my motives, and when I'm really considering, you know, is this helping me, or asking for myself to be able to help others, is checking with my body And if I feel that catch in my spirit, like a friend of mine says, or if I feel that twist in my gut or something in my heart or throat, pick up the phone, call my sponsor, call some great women in AA, and, you know, write it out, journal it out, talk it out. But there's something going on. My body acts like a compass, like a GPS, and it will definitely tell me if I'm not pure and ready to do whatever that is. So that has to get put on the back burner. So that's kind of how I keep myself straight on that. That's all I have.
All right. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that would be shown all throughout the day, what our next step is to be. I just want to say something about meditation. I didn't know this. I was born in the 60s, and I definitely, my sentiment is more with the world of the 60s, I love the Eastern traditions and stuff like that, so that kind of Indian meditation is appealing to me. I didn't find out later that in 1930s America, that wasn't what meditation meant. It was what I heard that what they meant by meditation is really constructive thought, and that's what we were reading earlier about envisioning our day and stuff like that. But I've definitely had practices of meditate, those kind of meditations. They've certainly been useful. But anyway, one of the things that I find as an alcoholic and observing with other alcoholics is we do not like to be still, just sitting still, And so that's just sitting still is a challenge for someone like me. So this is asking me again to consider my day. that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems, and just like in the language of the step itself, it says we're praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out, and that's a little summation of that right there. And it says we ask especially from freedom from self-will and careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. And that's, that's just a concise version of the seven-step prayer to me. This is my deal, is I'm getting fit, not so I can feel good, enjoy my day, get rich, all the things that I'm interested in. This is preparing me to be trying to be helpful to the world, to my fellows, and I need help. I need help with the knowledge of that and the power to carry that out. And I've certainly done a lot of prayer for myself. I've prayed for all kinds of good stuff. And I can tell you the stuff that I pray for, it hadn't showed up yet. So I think maybe that's what it's talking about. We've wasted a lot of time doing that and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. I didn't drive up in a Ferrari tonight. So anyway.
Thank you. All right, so on page 87, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer.
Okay, so this is kind of interesting to me. I was raised in a Methodist church, and then I became a spiritual person for a number of years. And, without going into a long story about that, I don't really like when people talk about specifics of religion or spirituality in AA, other than I believe in a being that's very loving and forgiving and fun, actually, a lot of fun. I think that God laughs, and I think that God loves when we laugh, like when we see our children laugh or we see children laughing and playing. I think God loves that. And as a result, my God, I sometimes picture as the big blue genie that comes out of a lamp in Aladdin that talks like Robin Williams, because I just think that must be a really fun god. And I never visualize God's face except for that genie. I have a little statue of that thing next to my bed, and I think about that a lot. But I've recently begun to go back to church and explore that, and I thought I was resistant to that for a long time. I had a really bad attitude about it. I'm going to say that here publicly. I had a really bad attitude. And so anything I've learned about myself is if I have a resistance to something, I probably really need to explore it. And so I was telling somebody, you know, I just have this resistance to Jesus in the Bible and these teachings, and this shows how well I know myself. I am totally outing myself here. I know this is recorded. So I said that I have this great resistance to, you know, religion and all this stuff. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, after I started going to church, I went back and looked at my journals for years, and I have signed them every day thanking, you know, God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, angels. Like I get on this whole list of things. So it shows how well I know myself. My self-awareness is nil after 20 and a half years in this program. I'm just now figuring it out. And that to me was hysterical. And that's more like a channel writing. That's how well I know myself in my mind, but that comes through me. And if there's anyone here that, you know, is distressed by that, or, you know, I would encourage you to just seek whatever bigger than you believe in. It doesn't have to be God, Jesus, Buddha, Baha'u'llah. I think all of them are okay. And it just something bigger than you. And what I found when I came here was my great disdain for, you know, people who thought one way. I always had to explore that, and I saw my own judgment there, and I didn't want to have that. That was a burden I was carrying. So I've just come to see my life in rather snapshots. You know, so this was this phase, and this is the next phase. And I believe that all of those add and become the person that I am. I think every single person that I meet, every experience that I have, certainly this one, is inside my consciousness, forms who I am in the next moment, and that I carry every experience with me, inside and outside. And we literally become different and bigger than we were because we're together here now. So I don't have a limit to that. I don't have an end to that. I'm not saying that this religion is the end. Then there's going to be the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. That's a way that I've seen that addiction and not having, you know, disdain for something, addiction can actually be good for me. If I turn that insatiable curiosity and need to know onto positive things, it can actually help me in self-awareness and growth to be a better person, to be a better person on the planet, to have something more to contribute, and certainly to be much more open-minded and less judgmental. So that always makes me laugh because I thought that I, you know, was not judgmental. And of course, I was. So it's been quite an expansion to see where religious people are right. And just to be open to that. And the last thing I'll say is I've actually started employing morning devotions. I don't say them with another person, but I have someone that we say the same morning devotions at about the same time of the day. And we read the same texts. And then I have a couple people that have become important to me over the years, not in this program. Some who are, but, you know, a lot who are not. And I will call on them and say prayer or devotion together with them for specific people. And it's astounding. It is astounding how that works. And I'm not saying I always get the results I want. Many times I get results. But always I get a better feeling and a much more centered. There's something about asking someone to enter into the spirit of something bigger than us. And I don't know what that is, but I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is, but something is working here and has been for a long period of time. So so I continue to follow whoever has something to offer in that regard. Thanks.
All right. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in. You've done that one time. I guess I don't play well with others, but I like to go it alone. Anyway,
I also was raised Methodist, and I will tell you that I guess I left Methodism probably around the age of 14 or 15, and I did not have much use for anything, God, Jesus, anything, any of that. You know, I'd found my solution, and it didn't include God. And anyway, so but you know, as I'm practicing AA and as I'm learning about AA, you know, the truth of the matter is these principles are age old. We borrowed all this stuff from other traditions and stuff, and you know, it says, and I did underline this, where it says, be quick to see where religious people are right, not that they are right. And the truth is when I became more open minded in AA, I did you know, find that people were pointing me in directions, and I did use the libraries to learn about meditation and other things, and people, you know, fellow AAs, I'm reading this book, you ought to check it out. And so I've grown to appreciate, you know, that you know, there's a lot of good stuff out there, and like that first reading says, better people are practicing this, you know, doing this constantly. You know, my experience even with affiliating outside of AA with some spiritual groups and stuff, there's some strong practitioners out there. I have never been that guy, but you know, I think Bill Wilson said that AA is spiritual kindergarten, and I can definitely see, looking at myself for sure, that you know, I don't know what it is. I'm a resistant guy, you know, mm-hmm. And I want to figure it out. I'm a self will run right guy, and anyway, I have made use of what these people offer, and I do see today that there's a lot to be contributed from these groups, but that's all I think I'm going to say on that one.
Okay, thank you. All right, still on page 87. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does.
Yeah, I love this one. So, we're no longer running the show. Excitement here is a key word for me, because, and that was kind of surprising when I first read this a long time ago, because I thought excitement was, you know, good. Because it usually was me, like, run riot, all about me. And fear, anger, worry, self-pity, yeah, you know, we know about those, but excitement, I have to be careful not to take that one and run with it. It can be a trigger for, you know, for some reason for me, that euphoric recall of how much fun it used to be, and that can carry me into places that I don't need to be, you know, conversations that I walk away from, even in sobriety, and I think, why did I have that? Where did I go? What was that about? It's like another person takes over. But I'm sure that it's something that used to happen when I was drinking, and it still can happen. I mean, it's been a long time since I had my last drink, but I can still act like I'm drinking. I can still relapse into that thinking and that behavior, and more than just with fear and worry, with excitement. It was probably not unlike some of you, but when I was drinking, you know, I was smart, funny, and lively. And I turned a phrase or two, and you know, we can all dance better. We can all write
better poetry. We are more creative and enamoring. So that excitement, I'm sure, is some state-dependent memory that is triggered in me, and I have to be really careful that one. When I step out of the way, I love that it says it takes less energy, I'm paraphrasing, but it really does take less energy to be, this reminds me of a sponsee that I used to have, And she actually taught me an awful lot. She was one of the most difficult people I ever worked with, and she taught me immeasurable lessons. And when I was really distressed with her, and I would try to reason with her.
Reason,
for those of you who can't see me, I'm gesturing to my head. It never worked. And it was just this push and pull you, and I could feel it over the phone, or I could see it in person. And when I would drop into the center or the core of who I am, everything would work. And it was like one of those Chinese finger traps or whatever they are. The more I pulled, the tighter it got. And when I let go, it just released. And at one point, after we'd worked together for a long time, she said to me, she looked at me so sweetly, and she said, "I love when you speak to me in your heart voice. Because when you do, you're completely different. And absolutely everything you say makes sense." And I realized that's what I was doing when I stop fighting and when I drop into the place where I lose the energy, where I'm not taken over with excitement or, you know, any of the other things, trying to control, being afraid, I'm not enough, being angry, she's not listening. And when I drop into that heart space, and to this day I think about that. I can't always do it right away, but I will always be grateful to her for that, because when I'm in that heart place, it feels better to me too. So that's all I have on that.
All right. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. That would be nice in theory. yeah, but it is, to be honest, that is usually what it takes for me to reach to God, is some kind of disturbance. And you know, and this is just something that sometimes I'm successful with, sometimes I'm gonna attack it head, you know, just I'm gonna figure out something and get reactive and make a mess. But anyway, I like this. The next line says, "We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, 'Thy will be done.'" And this just brings me back to that whole notion of playing God, and because that's you know, when I remember first reading that years ago, coming to AA, this thing about playing God, and I thought, that's ridiculous. I definitely don't do that. And I thought it was some guy, you know, just basically telling everybody what to do. And you know, what I know, how I do it today, is I just think I know what you should be doing. I may not tell you, but I definitely know what you should be doing, not doing. I know what I should be doing and not doing. And then that starts informing my actions, and then I start to step on your toes and just make a mess. And so that's, you know, this is brings me back to that keystone concept, you know, that hereafter in the drama of life, that God was going to be the director, you know, and all those things, and that my directing days are over, as much as I try. That is my striving to ask God to, with help for that. We're much less danger of excitement, fear, and this is true too. You know, when I do it, disturbed, even in the mildest form of disturbance. You know, if I can remember just that, oh, I don't have to direct the show. I'm playing God right now. That's not my job. There is a very tangible, very immediate experience of letting go. You know, just stop. You know, recognition that I'm just playing God again. And
and I ask for, and I reach out to God, and whatever seems to be going on in that immediate moment seems to immediately be taken care of. And this is just talking about all this is we do not easily tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we tried to arrange life to suit ourselves. And that's it, you know, me thinking about me and what you can do for me and what the world can do for me. And that's and that doesn't work. That absolutely doesn't work. But this stuff does. So
thank you. Okay, we've got one more reading and a few minutes left to discuss that. So on page 88, we alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we've just outlined. But this is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
So this is... I'm definitely undisciplined. And I can overdo things that I love to do, and I can underdo things that I don't love to do. And, yeah. So I constantly strive to be better, but it is a constant battle. And the best way for me to be disciplined is to hit walls and have a lot of pain or have some suffering. Suffering is a great motivator for me. You would think, since I don't really care for suffering, that I would be more proactive. And about some things I am. There are some things I do quite well because I don't want to suffer. And one of them is do a lot of work with AA and attend meetings because I don't want to relapse. I don't want that kind of suffering. But there have been, you know, moments over the years when I find myself thinking, wow, you know, Cabernet looks a little bit good tonight. And that's just calling out the truth. That's just saying what it is. But there are other forms of suffering that I seem willing to endure. So I'm constantly under discipline of some sort. Faith without works is dead. I love that. And that kind of goes together. It's perfect that it's in this paragraph because I can be a great planner and a great dreamer. I can come up with all sorts of ideas, and I can, you know, get together with Brad and we can talk about all sorts of things, but then actually applying those things, that can be a challenge sometimes, knowing where to start. And I can get really stuck in indecision and so mired down in the creative brilliance in my head. Or, you know, the other failing that comes to me often that applies to both of these things and being undisciplined and works is, or actually, you know, putting your foot forward is in not thinking that I have enough. So I need more education. I need more qualifications. I need more this. I'm not good enough. I'm not that enough. And what I have to remember, and this is one of my biggest challenges, but I would tell you this easily, but it's hard for me to apply it to myself, and that is I really believe that alcoholics are very gifted. Alcoholics in recovery are particularly gifted because we have not only found, you know, life in another dimension, and we've not only come out of hellacious experiences, but I believe that our survival skills and our intuition and our creativity probably is accelerated. Now, that can be a double-edged sword, but I really believe that when we come out of difficult situations like that, our senses are heightened. Once we get through the initial part of that, where everything seems dull and we have to relearn things and we have to find new ways of coping and feel and deal with emotions, then I believe we go into a different aspect where we really can tap into something that was always ours. I really believe that all of us come here with unique gifts, talents, and abilities. And if we don't use them, they don't come to the earth. They're not on the planet. And when I say that, I have to acknowledge that the same must be true for me. So even in my, you know, undisciplined phases or my the times when I feel like I'm not good enough to move forward, I have to remember that if I really believe that all of us do come here with something to do, then everything can be used
my dad used to say everything's a plus, and I thought he only meant the gold stars that I got or the A's that I got. But I've come to find out that the darker times, or, you know, healing from recovery, or recovering from a betrayal, or really helping someone else through something, that has been the time in my life that has meant the most. Not the times where I coasted, not the times that were easy, not the times when I had plenty of money, plenty of friends, you know, and all the good stuff. It was the times when I really had to reflect on what was the most important and what I really valued. And I'll close with this. I think age has a lot to do with that, too. I really believe that living a long time in recovery and getting to be a certain age, you realize that you literally spend time, that there is only so much time. And how do I want to spend that? And how do I want to be? And how do I want to leave the planet better because I've been here? So that's it.
I'll make this quick. Yes, I am undisciplined. I still am undisciplined to the group. You know, I was thinking, I was talking earlier about doing a lot of stuff rotely, and that works. I've done all this stuff for bad reasons, you know, to fit in or whatever, to be good, and it doesn't matter, you know. If I do these simple things, even getting a sponsor, joining a home group, taking these steps, something happens just by doing this. However faultingly, however ungracefully I do it, and something changes in me where it's almost like the motivation for doing these things is shows up, and like I was saying earlier about the path narrowing, you know, the resistance I even bring today to this thing, I can't imagine, living successfully and in some other way based on, you know, just my best thinking and all that, you know. I've just, you know, time and time again, I do this and I gain a greater experience of you guys, this power that I don't understand, and life, you know. So, thanks.
I'd like to thank Alicia and Brad.
I'm clapping for you.
To pass the seventh tradition basket, and that is that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And I've got a couple announcements up here. Supper and a Speaker is coming up in a few weeks. We've got, who do we have? Mark, isn't it? Yeah, there we go. Mark from Richmond is coming to speak on March the 7th. We'll have a potluck supper. Woo-hoo! Bring food if you want to eat. And that'll start at 6. It's a Monday night. Our regular meeting time starts at 7, and that's when the speaker will start. And there are blue flyers over on the literature table. And if you don't have anything to do this weekend, the Oceanfront Conference is this weekend. We have plenty of flyers up here if anybody needs to register and wants to go to that. Anybody else have any announcements? Of course you do.
My name's Kyle, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. It's coming Friday through Sunday in Manhattan, New York, is the Eastern Area Conference of Young People in AA. 2,000 sober alcoholics are descending upon the Grand Hyatt right above Grand Central Station. And there's going to be some really excellent workshops. There's going to be, we're going to be taking over the China bus Thursday with the tree conference event. It's Thursday, and it's just a bunch of drunks touring around New York. There's some really great speakers, and there's going to be a whole lot of fun. A glow-in-the-dark dance, a Nerf gun battle, and karaoke. So if you don't think you can have fun and sobriety, you can. So if you're interested, registration is $35. Awesome. But if you can't afford that, please talk to me after the meeting, and we can get you situated where you want to go. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom.
Ashley.
My home group, Downtown Young and Sober, is having its annual Spring Action event on Saturday, March 12th. Two speakers followed by a question and answer period, and it's a potluck, so bring this if you wish.
All right. Is that everybody? Okay. If you're new and you don't have a home group, this is an excellent home group to become a member of. Would home group members please raise your hand? Okay. And the important question, we do like to welcome any newcomers. Is there anyone here within their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to give us their first name?
Sarah Alcohol.
Hey, Sarah.
Welcome.
Hey,
Steven.
Hey, Steven. Welcome.
Okay, we do have some literature available. The books are for sale. The paper literature is for free. There's a newcomer packet over there, and the new meeting lists are out for January. Sponsorship, another important thing here. If you need a sponsor and are afraid to ask anybody, anyone raising their hand now is willing to be a sponsor. So feel free to go up and talk to these people, lots of them. Or you can come up and talk to me after the meeting if you have any questions about sponsorship. Let's see. Smokers, please use the butt can outside the front door. Stay away from the front door because we do share the church with other meetings. We do record our meetings, and they are at simpleactions.net on our website. You can also sign up for our mailing list on the website. And I would like to thank our speakers one more time. You're all over the place. So, let's see. We're going to clean up after the meeting, and then we will go for the meeting after the meeting at Plaza del Sol, which is just a couple blocks down the street at Colonial and 22nd. And free chips. If you don't want to eat, you can come and just share about Step 11. And I believe David is eager to read.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only the God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. We're going to close with the Lord's
Prayer. I'm eager. Good job.
Thank you.
That was good.
They heard you were speaking.
I think so.
But deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.